worms crawl in, the worms crawl out. They'll eat your guts and spit them out. And when your bones begin to rot, the worms remain, but you do not. So don't ever laugh as a hearse goes by, for someday you'll be next in line. And when death brings his cold despair, ask yourself, will anyone care?
Macabre may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
You know how, like, you go all weekend and then your body is like, yeah.
Yes.
Well, you know, because you had that recently from being at the Rock Fest. But yeah, I felt it today. I was tired. So, but birthday party shenanigans, a little bit on Friday night. That was fun. And then also Saturday night, I got home at like 2 a.m, which I never stay out that late. And then yesterday I went up to Indianapolis and stayed the night and then drove back early this morning. So.
Nice. Well, yeah. I'm just saying, for you looking the way you do and you saying that you had a weekend of just, you know, I'm like, I would not have guessed it.
Well, I was the DD, so Friday night I had a few drinks and that was about it. And then Saturday I had a rosé wine flight at dinner, but it was a very small pour. And then I had like part of a drink at the arcade bar that we went to, and then that was it. Nice. So I didn't really have much to drink for obvious reasons, since I was the driver and want to make sure, you know, Amber had a good time. And
right.
So it was just mostly just being tired.
But still, you don't look tired. You look fabulous.
I napped today a lot.
Lucky. Lucky. Nice.
Don't tell anyone, but I might have taken 3 naps.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. Yeah. So. And makeup helps.
Heck yeah. You look awesome.
Thanks. So yeah, found out Ren Faire is coming up in Cincinnati. I have not been, but I hear it's incredible.
What? You've never been?
No. Oh. And so it runs like through, like, I think it starts sometime in September or late August and runs through like part of October. So there's themed weekends. So you better believe your sweet ass I'm getting tickets this year. I already ordered my outfit.
Yes.
Yeah.
Tell me your outfit.
So it's kind of like a warrior princess outfit. Not so much on the princess, but more on the warrior side. So it's got, I got it on Etsy. So it's got like brown leather corset and then like green kind of off cap shoulders and like the bustier.
Did you go like full Xena?
Not fully. It's a little bit sexy, a little bit edgy. And then I'm also going to do like the elf ears. And then I think I'm going to get like a bow and arrow or a crossbow or something like that. So I think we're going to do the fantasy weekend. We're going to go that weekend.
Nice.
So that's the first weekend in September because I've got some fun events happening that weekend.
Nice.
And I have a date.
All?
Already?
Yeah. Yay.
So, and then my friends are going to go, of course. So we're trying to figure out like what everybody's going to wear and stuff. But
that's awesome. I'm a big Rennie.
I have never been. I mean, I've watched LARPing live, like just at the park in San Diego, just on a Sunday, grabbed a sandwich and picnicked in the park and just randomly saw LARPers out there. But, and then, you know, cosplay at Comic-Con and stuff like that is obviously huge in San Diego, but I've never done the Ren Faire. So I'm super excited about that.
It's fun. I have a full Renaissance dress, like a 3-piece.
I am not surprised by that.
When I nerd hard.
So where do they have it around you?
The closest, well, I mean, technically they have one in Chippewa, They had it open when I was younger, shut down for a little bit. It's kind of back up and running here and there. But the one that I like to go to that has been around since before I was born is in Shakopee, Minnesota. They have a very good Ren Fair there. They do all the themed weekends too. And my favorite weekend is the Highlander weekend.
Oh, nice.
Kilts, they baby.
They had they actually had that on their list too.
Yeah. And let me tell you, it's a bunch of buff dudes in kilts, and they definitely follow the kilt law.
I think I know what the kilt law is.
You know what the kilt law
is. Maybe I should change my weekend. No, I'm kidding. Yeah.
You should, especially if it's going to be windy.
I mean, my date was like, well, you've seen pictures of my date. He was like, what should I wear? He's like, I think I want to do some kind of fun mashup. He's like, Elvis. Ooh. He's like, Elvis Executioner.
Oh my gosh, that'd be hilarious.
I was like, that would be hilarious. But and then he was also, you know, he's in the medical field. So he's like doctor, plague doctor, something like that, obviously would be kind of on the nose. Cool. But mm-hmm. I was like, executioner with like a deep V.
Yes.
I was like, I would vote for that.
Oh my gosh, that'd be hilarious.
Yeah, it's gonna be a good time.
Heck yeah, I'm excited for you. I can't wait to hear stories from that.
We'll definitely all send you some pictures too.
Yes.
So that'll be something to look forward to. And then this coming weekend is the big Gen Con in Indianapolis. So I have tickets for that on Sunday.
Nice. Have fun.
Yeah. So all fun stuff.
Heck yeah. That's awesome.
But yeah, I don't know. I was thinking maybe I would start today since I'm super motivated.
Oh, heck yeah. Do it. You do it.
Oh, man. It's a doozy of an episode.
I can't wait. Like, I know a little bit about it, but I don't know everything. So I'm going to be in for it.
Oh, man. Yeah, I mean, I know a little bit about it, too. It's okay. Crazy. So I lied. It's 10 pages.
Oh, still.
Yeah.
Double digits.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's bullet points and stuff, so I don't know. But yeah, I think it's a heavy case.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much lightheartedness we're going to be able to actually put into this one.
Mine as well.
yeah, so, but fortunately, right around the corner is the idioms episode. So,
yeah.
Right after the Hometown Macabre, actually. So that'll be nice to kind of lighten that up for listeners. So hang with us. The next two, this one and the Hometown, are going to be a little bit heavy, but we'll lighten it up shortly.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't really know how to kick this off other than just to say, buckle up. This episode is not for the faint of heart. Welcome to Macabre, Dark History Podcast. I'm Hallie.
I'm Blair.
And today we are going to be talking about the brutal massacre of six people that took place on a farm property in rural Germany back in 1922. And this case remains Germany's most notorious unsolved murder. And when I say unsolved, I mean authorities don't have a clear-cut, definitive answer on who did the killings, but they have some strong contenders. And we're going to talk about suspects at the end. And in more recent re-examination of the case, let's just say we have a leading contender, but they won't actually give the name of who it is because, yeah, this person has surviving family members, obviously, that out of respect. But we'll talk about that at the end.
Oh, this is news to me. I'm very excited.
Yeah. So we'll talk about theories. We're going to talk about, you know, motives and things like that. And then I'll let listeners, of course, you can make your own opinions at the end. And then if you want to share those on our private Facebook group, of course, we'd love to hear from you and see what you think. Mm-hmm. So, without further ado, on today's episode, we are, of course, going to be talking about the gruesome axe murders of six, the Hinter KFAK murders. And I've been wanting to cover this for a while, and it's not the only axe murder we're going to be covering this season. So stay tuned for more on that later.
Mm-hmm.
As I mentioned, the story takes place in Germany. The location is 43 miles north of Munich on a small Bavarian farm behind a town called KFAK. Hinter, the word Hinter actually means behind. So mm-hmm. that's where this name, Hinter KFAK, comes from. So we have to start by talking about the people that inhabited the property and kind of set up their history. Our victims include 63-year-old Andreas Gruber, 72-year-old, and I'm going to say this name the way it is spelled. There's a couple different ways I've heard it pronounced. I don't really know the German pronunciation, so it is spelled as if it sounds like Kazelia, but I think the German pronunciation might be more like Tzatzelia, I think is the way I've heard it pronounced. But anyways, 72-year-old Tzatzelia, which was Andreas's elder wife, a little bit of an age gap there. Tzatzelia was actually a widow when they got married. So she actually owned the farm, was widowed, and then not too long after met Andreas, he was younger, mm-hmm. came in, and then they kind of, you know, got married, and the rest is history. I found that was interesting. I did not know that fact.
Yeah, that is. I did not know that either.
They had a daughter together, who at the time of the murders was 35 years old. Her name was Victoria Gabriel, and she had two children at the time. 7-year-old daughter, younger Tzatzelia, who was named after her grandmother. And she was a child of Victoria's first husband, whose name was Carl Gabriel. And Victoria was actually a widow. Her husband, Carl, died in World War I in France. Victoria had another child, a son, 2-year-old Joseph, who we are going to talk about to some extent as we go throughout this story. And then the final victim would be the maid, Maria Baumgartner, who was actually hired the same day as the murders.
Oh, bad first day.
Yeah, not a great turn of events for her. And in fact, when her body was found, her like rucksack or bag that she had all of her belongings in was near her body, and it was not even unpacked. So
that's so bad.
She had only been at the property for like a matter of hours before all this went down.
Yeah. Mm-mm.
Talk about shitty luck.
Yeah, for real.
Okay. So now a little bit about the family history. Andreas, the older man, father, was known for being abusive, domineering, and basically a horrible human being. And this is a trigger warning for people, as it does involve discussions of abuse, rape, and incest. So please skip ahead the next several minutes if that is a trigger for you. So one thing I'll mention about this case is that the people in the town did not care for this family, let's just say. It's rumored that there were also other children that were born to Andreas and Tzatzelia, but Victoria, their 35-year-old daughter, is the only child that is said to have survived.
Wow.
Which is interesting. And mm-hmm. then there were rumors in the town that the other children were badly abused, neglected, locked up in the cellar for days at a time. And this could have led to their death. But then also we have to think about the time frame when these kids would have been growing up. You know, there's influenza and TB and all those things kind of were happening too. Right. So it's tough to say for sure, but Victoria survived. Why did she survive? Well, she had some attributes that Andreas was quite fond of. And it's also a known fact that Andreas was convicted of having an incestuous relationship with his daughter. And they actually both spent time in prison for it. They were
both caught- of them?
Yes. Yes.
So she was like okay with this?
I don't know that. But what happened was they were caught in the act by one of the maids. So whether she was raped, whether she was compliant, whatever the situation was.
Oh my gosh.
It happened. They got caught. The courts or whatever authorities don't care. They still punished her too. So he spent a year in prison. She spent a month in prison was what one of the sources that I read said. Basically, a maid caught them in a pile of hay. And this had been going on for years. It is said that, well, we'll get into more of that in a minute. But unfortunately, the law said it didn't matter. She was guilty of this too, which is really sad and unfortunate because my thoughts on this is probably this was happening from a very young age and you don't know the mindset or the mental state of this person. And
exactly. Oh my gosh.
It's also alleged that little Joseph, the 2-year-old boy, is perhaps a child of that incestuous relationship, which we'll get into more discussion on that later. So surrounding the murders, some strange shit went down leading up to those events. And these are all things that are important to talk about. So we're going to go through these. Because they're eerie, they don't make a lot of sense, and I think if this stuff was going down and I lived there, I'd probably would have left or like questioned it more, so we're going to talk about those. Okay, so first thing, it's believed that the killer or the killers might have been inside the attic of the home before the murders. It's a known fact that the family heard footsteps up in the attic long before the murders happened. Now, one of the maids quit like a year before the murders because she was so creeped out by the noises that she was hearing inside the house. She thought the place was haunted. And now talk about like your intuition and listening to your gut instinct. She eventually like peaced out. She was like, this is weird. There's something going on here. And she eventually testified in court about some of the potential suspects. So talk about like dodging an axe.
Yeah.
But so my question is, with the stuff that she was hearing, is it possible that like this had been going on that long?
Right. This is one of the things I do know about this case. And it's just, if it's going on that long, you know for a fact somebody in the family has heard it. It had to have gotten discussed. So...
Well, and the maid clearly talked about it, but they all just, the family is just like, oh, she's mental. She's crazy. Mm-hmm. You know, like she's talking about ghosts. She's talking about.
Yeah.
And they just were like, oh, she's just crazy.
Which, I have a weird theory to share with you at the end.
Okay, good. I'm excited to hear that.
Yeah.
So listeners, keep that in the back of your mind, too, because obviously, as we get close to the murders, this intensifies because other people start to hear it too. So the next thing that happens is a week prior to the murders, Andreas finds a copy of a newspaper, the Munich Zeitung, at the edge of the forest on the property. Now, this newspaper was from the city that's 40-some miles away, okay? This newspaper had no business being there. It was completely out of place, as if someone had intentionally put it there. And Andreas made it a point to ask the postman if he had maybe, like, maybe he was carrying it and he, you know, left it there by mistake or something like that. And the postman denied it. And Andreas even went around to ask other people if it was theirs. And no one in the area had a subscription to the newspaper.
So that would freak me out.
Weird, right? It's like, why? I don't. I've tried to think my way through this one, and I really don't have an explanation for that at all. Just very random.
Very. Unless, well, we'll talk about that later, because it might play into something else.
So a week before the murders, a light snow had fallen. A set of footsteps could be seen leading from the forest onto the property to a machine shed that had a broken lock. Andreas did a search of the shed, but he couldn't find anything. Nothing seemed out of place. The footsteps also led into the house, but did not lead back out of the house. So it was as if someone went into the house, but never came back out. He searched the entire property, but found nothing. He also heard noises inside the house that were unusual, and he made a point to make sure that he told the neighbors about this. So there are accounts of the neighbors, you know, attesting to this fact.
Okay.
So on March 25th, just days before the murders, a neighbor girl by the name of Sophie and her mother were walking near the woods. They saw Victoria by the road, and she was crying uncontrollably and shaking. And she was muttering and saying over and over again that she needed to get away. Now, it's also known that right around the time of the murders, she completely emptied her bank account.
Okay. Interesting.
Just 2 days before the murders, the wife of Andreas, Cecilia, had a nervous breakdown, and she is said to have run off into the forest, and no one knows why.
I did not hear that.
Yeah. So why did she have a nervous breakdown?
Yeah.
Was she freaking out about the noises that she heard in the attic? I also heard one account that there was some sort of like altercation between her and the husband. Then you factor in whatever was going on with Victoria and her meltdown and her emptying her bank account. There was some serious stuff going on in this family.
Yeah.
So Cecilia obviously knew about the incest, right? That's a pretty heavy burden to bear. That would make anyone crazy. And then Victoria dealing with what she was dealing with, I could see why she would want to run away and take her child. Yeah. And
absolutely.
So yeah, those are all things to keep in mind and consider. So yeah, what was going on in the household? Hold on to those thoughts, because we're gonna get into some dirty tea in a minute that might explain. You know, dirty some tea. Of that. So just one day before the murders, Andreas went out to one of the sheds on the property, and he noticed there were scratches around the lock that indicated that someone had either tried to break into the tool shed or had successfully gotten into the tool shed. So it makes you wonder what they were doing in there. Looking for an axe, maybe? Another important fact to note, there were two set of keys to the house. The day before the murders, one set of the keys mysteriously went missing.
Oh. At that point, with everything else going on, I think I would have absolutely had enough. I probably would have, yeah.
Yeah, like what do you do? I mean,
yeah. Because at what point are you just like, I'm not overthinking this anymore? Like,
yeah, too much. Too much adding up to something bad happening here. Andreas also told the neighbors during this time frame when all this weird stuff was going down that he had seen a man lurking at the edge of the forest just staring down at his house. And Victoria, the daughter, also said the same thing. So my question was, when all this weird stuff is happening, especially that guy just lurking at the edge of the property, why not go out there with a weapon and approach this guy?
Right?
Especially if you think it's someone you might know. Uh-huh. And even if you don't, I assume living on a farm, you probably have some sort of a firearm, right? Mm-hmm. A shotgun or a rifle. Right. Something for hunting purposes, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know this guy is old. He's getting older or aging. But I don't care how old you are. Back in those days, you have a little more gumption. someone's creeping on your property. We already know this guy is not a great dude.
Right.
And clearly, someone's messing with your property. They've broken into your shed. This guy's creeping around. You're hearing noises in your house. Your keys are missing. You're going to be highly suspicious of what the hell is going on. I'm going to take a weapon and I'm going to go find out.
Right. Well, and look at your time frame. Like, you are coming out of World War One.
Yeah.
You can't tell me that you're not, like, ready or a little on the defensive side if something like that were to happen. Like,
yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah. So just a lot of things don't make sense here.
No.
So on the day of the murders, Andreas also, because he, you know, went looking around for some stuff, he discovered that straw had been spread all over the floor of the attic.
Oh, no.
So.
Time to get out.
Someone was either soundproofing the attic, or they were, like, making some sort of, like, makeshift bed.
Mm-hmm.
It depends on how, you know, like, spread out it was or how deep the straw was. But I would assume it was probably some sort of soundproofing, like they were hanging out, getting ready to do whatever it was they were going to do.
Yeah. Imagine trying to get all that hay up there, though.
Oh, yeah. How did they do that?
Like, hey, that's a, you know, even if you're taking it by the handful, that's really hard to just, like, not make a track of, you know,
Or do you think it was already up there for, like, insulation?
That could be. Like, if it, like was,
it was
just
in
kind
the walls,
like,
or something.
Yeah. Okay. That would make more sense.
And then they just, like, pulled it out or something for...
Yeah, that makes way more sense.
I'm going with that. Let's go with that.
Yeah. otherwise I'm just picturing this dude with, like, arms full of hay, like,
just stuffed in his shirt, like the scarecrow from Wizard of Oz.
Just, like, trying to be quiet around the house, like, you can't see me, you can't hear me.
One of the things that investigators end up finding when they were, you know, doing their investigations later was they found, like, loose tiles in the attic, like, the roof area, so, like, where you would stand up, where you could reach, so they could slide the tiles back and forth and have a full view of the courtyard of the house, so they could see people and keep an eye on what was going on the property.
That's freaky.
Yeah.
That so, in itself is not, oh no. No, yeah, gross.
So they're hanging out there, keeping an eye on stuff. But yeah, so even after finding the hay spread out like that, it's like, okay. Well, let's go into town and run our errands. So,
like it's just gonna disappear by the time you get back. Like,
yeah,
you better be going to town and letting somebody know.
So yeah, I think it was Cecilia and maybe Victoria. Some of the ladies went into town, ran some errands, and you know they mentioned to some of the town folk like this weird stuff was happening. But that was kind of it. They went about their business. They made note of it with people and came back home. Like, no big deal. So that was kind of the end of it for them. And then now we're going to go into a timeline now.
Oh.
On April 1st, a couple coffee sellers by the name of Hans and Edward Shirvosky arrived at the family farm to take a coffee order that had been placed by Victoria. But when they got there and they knocked, no one answered the door. So they walked around the property for a bit. They heard the family dog barking. They noticed that the gate to the machine house was open. And they didn't really pay it too much mind. They're like, well, that's weird. I guess, you know, they have other plans or they're away from home, and that was kind of the end of their visit. That same day, Cecilia, the younger Cecilia, was missing from school.
Mm.
In the evening, a neighbor, Michael Pluckle, passed the farm. He made the same route every day on his way home from work, and he noticed that there was smoke coming from the chimney. But he said that as he was walking, he noticed that there was also a very strange smell associated with the smoke. He said that night that the farm was very silent, which was unusual, and that he noticed there was a dark figure of a man on the property lurking around the courtyard that he did not recognize. But it was difficult to make out because it was at night. And when this person saw him, this guy basically shined a flashlight of sorts directly into his face, kind of like blinding him. Mm-hmm. And he was so taken back, it like gave him the creeps that he just like took off.
I would have too. I'm like, I'm sorry, but if we're doing this, fuck that.
He just like got the fuck out of there. He's like, yeah, that's weird. Like it was just this whole... The whole vibe was off, you know? He's like, it's some weird smell come from the chimney. And, like, the place is quiet. Like, there's this dude out there in the middle of the night. Like, normally, just everything is just, something's not right. But he didn't press the issue. He just, like, I'm getting the fuck out of here. So, now we're at April 2nd, which was a Sunday. The family was missing from church.
Mm.
Victoria was very active in church. She also sang in the choir. So it would have been very unusual for them not to attend church, which also is kind of weird if you think about the fact that what was going on in the family and the incest and bad things. But yeah, Victoria was pretty active, and that was kind of like one of her escapes.
Mm-hmm.
So they were not at church. On Monday, April the 3rd, the mailman, Joseph Mayer, delivered the mail and noticed that the kitchen door was kind of like ajar, and he thought that was unusual. The mail had been piling up at the post office. When he arrived at the property, he didn't really hear anyone. And he just assumed maybe that the family had left and didn't really give it too much more thought. Then On Tuesday the 4th, a repairman, Albert Hoffner, arrived at the property because he was previously scheduled to do some engine repair. He noticed that the family dog was frantically barking. The dog had been locked up. He noticed there was a man out in one of the fields. And again, he didn't really give it too much thought because he'd done work at the property before and the Grubers had different farm hands and things like that. So he just did what he came to do. And when his work was done, he went kind of back around to the front of the house and he noticed that the dog had been moved and was now chained up out front. And dog was still barking. And this time he got a closer look at the dog and the dog had like a gash on its face.
Oh.
So at first he didn't really think like the family was home. There was clearly like a farmhand on the property, but the dog had been moved. So he's like, okay, this is kind of weird. Like, so he was like, well, I finished my job. I'm going to go knock on the door, see if anybody's home so I can like let them know the job is done or collect money or do whatever it was he was supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
So he knocks on the door, but no one answers. He's like, okay, well, this is weird. And then he goes like to the barn area before the barn was locked or shut. And now the barn door is open. He's like, okay.
That would freak me out.
But something in his gut is like, don't go into the barn. I don't know. Don't go into the barn. So he does not go into the barn.
Okay, good.
And he's like, you know what? I'm going to go check in with the neighbors. So he goes to the neighbor's house. Neighbor's name is Lorenz Schlittenbauer. And he tells him that no one's answering the door at the Gruber property and that he was there to do a job. He'd finished it. And Schlittenbauer gets concerned. So he sends his sons over to check things out, which is kind of weird. Why didn't he go over there himself if he had concerns? But you'll find out he has some beef with Andreas. Yeah, which we are going to talk about. The boys come back and they tell their dad they peeked in the windows. Everything is locked up and the place is dark. So Lorenz is like, well, this isn't normal. It's like, this shouldn't be like this, you know? So he goes around to some of his other neighbors who had seen some weird stuff. They all get together to go to investigate. By the time they get back to the property, the barn doors are still open. Well, when they get there, the first thing they notice is that one of the cows is outside of the barn where it shouldn't be. And it's just running around like all willy-nilly.
Oh, no.
And so they go inside the barn. And when they get inside the barn, as you can imagine, the situation is not good. It's not good at all.
Oh, no.
So, now we're going to get into the murders and the details.
Oh, no.
So, trigger warnings and all that. Take a deep breath. Here we go.
Okay. Ooh.
Okay. Negative energy is not allowed.
Yeah. Negative energy is not allowed. Ever.
Put your snacks down, people, because you're done.
Yeah. You're done for a while.
If you're having lunch right now or your breakfast sandwich or whatever the case may be, you're done.
Yep.
Okay. Sometime during the evening of March 31st, 1922, all six inhabitants of the Bavarian farmstead were brutally murdered by an unknown assailant or assailants. All of the victims were struck with what is known as a grube axe or a mattock. Which is a tool that is similar to a pickaxe. To give you a better description of what a grube axe looks like, it is a mattock that has a shaft typically made of wood, which is about 3 to 4 feet in length. The head consists of two ends opposite each other. One end kind of looks like an axe, and the other looks more like a garden hoe for digging. The head weighs about anywhere from 3 to 7 pounds, mm-hmm. depending on the size. So you can imagine what that would do to someone's skull. Mm-hmm. The term grub axe comes from grubbing, or it could be grub axe, comes from grubbing in the soil, because the digging end is designed for that purpose. It would have been used to dig into hard and rocky soil, which is exactly what you would have seen on the Gruber family farmstead. They had potato farms and things like that. So mm-hmm. that would have been its intended purpose. Four of the victims, Andreas Gruber, Cecilia Gruber, Victoria Gabriel, and her 7-year-old daughter, Cecilia, were all lured into the barn and murdered one by one. I'm going to give you another trigger warning, because this is where you're going to get your description of the injuries in detail. By now, it's April 4th, and the bodies have been in the barn since the night of March 31st. Oh. So they've been there for a while. Mm-hmm. The victims were found piled up on top of each other, covered in hay, and pieces of old barn door were laid on top. Court physician Dr. Johann Baptist Mueller conducted the autopsies of the first four victims right where they were found inside the barn. It was determined that all four victims died by blunt force trauma, with the weapon most likely being a pickaxe, known as a mattock, as I had mentioned earlier. Andreas Gruber's skull was crushed. His skull was so badly fractured that his cheekbones protruded from his face.
Oh.
His wife, the elder Cecilia, had taken 7 blows to the head, which completely destroyed her skull. The daughter, 35-year-old Victoria, had also suffered a similar fate. Her skull had been caved in by multiple blows. Her head also had, I have 2 different reports. One said 7, one said 9 star-shaped wounds on the side of her face. So this sounds like the way the weapon was used may have been slightly different for her. She also showed signs of strangulation. She was the only victim to show any signs of strangulation, which is something to note for later when we discuss potential suspects and motives. Mm-hmm. This also gives us a little something extra to think about when we are going to talk about intent. The youngest victim in the barn, Victoria's daughter, 7-year-old Cecilia. This one is bad. It's really, really bad. Her jaw had been completely shattered by blunt force. She also had what appeared to be a knife wound across her throat, several like circular punctures. The physician noted that she had fistfuls of her own hair in her hands, which she pulled out of her own scalp, most likely due to torment and extreme pain, because it is estimated that she did not die instantly, that it took her several hours to die as she laid piled in amongst the dead bodies of her grandparents and her mother.
Oh my gosh.
She would have witnessed her entire family being murdered. Yeah. And it is believed that, I think the timeline was, they were lured out one by one. And I think it was, I want to say, I might get this wrong, people, so forgive me. But I want to say Andreas was in his night clothes, and I think his wife Cecilia was in her night clothes, and then Victoria and younger Cecilia were in their regular clothes. So the way the investigators think it went down is like someone basically caused a ruckus. Well, we'll get into that when we go through. But basically, those two were lured out first. Victoria kind of like went down first. Younger Cecilia, and then the grandparents like came out looking for them. But unfortunately, younger Cecilia, she did not die right away. So she suffered and still witnessed all this happening. So the maid, Maria Baumgartner, and the youngest child, Joseph, were both murdered while sleeping in their respective bedchambers. Joseph was found in his bassinet. Both suffered massive blows to the head with a mattock. Interestingly, Maria was covered up with a bedsheet, and Joseph was covered up by one of his mother's dresses.
Indeed.
More on that at the end. So let's talk about how badly this investigation was botched.
Oh, no. Oh, it was always the case.
Yeah. So this is where we run into some problems with the crime scene. Lauren Schlittenbauer breaks the number one rule and immediately starts moving the bodies.
Dude.
He saw a leg sticking out of the hay. He like immediately grabs the leg, pulls the body out. Then he starts, you know, pulling the bodies apart, moving them, setting bodies up. And then the guys he's with are like, dude, you can't move the bodies. This is a crime scene, man. But it was already too late and the damage was done. He claimed that he was trying to find the little boy. Later, one of the men said off record that Schlittenbauer was very oddly composed, like unfazed by how crazy all that shit was, like how he was cool and composed, and he should have been like freaking out and respecting the space. And
especially if he's the neighbor and he has kids at home and there's something like this going on near his house.
Oh, you just wait.
Yeah.
Until we get to the end.
Oh, no.
And they also said that when he finally went into the house to go look for the little boy, that he seemed to know his way around very well for someone who had claimed to only have been at the house like once or twice before. So the next problem was the closest investigators were the ones that were in Munich, which were 40 miles away.
That's insane.
So by the time they got to the scene, dozens of looky-loos had already walked through the crime scene, trampled over everything. People were inside the house, like eating the food out of like the respective food places. You know
what?
Yeah. No one liked these people. They did not like this. Most people did not like this family. They had no respect for them. They were just, it was like an event. You know, they wanted to see. They were morbidly curious about. Yeah. So,
oh man.
It was a spectacle for sure.
Yeah. But still, it's like, even if you don't like the person that this happened to or how many people, it's like, really? How fucking the audacity.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, and then you're really gonna lose your knickers over this.
Oh, well, they are already bunched.
There were no fingerprints taken.
Well, so we're looking at the 20s, right? 1920s?
This was a common forensic practice at this time, and there were there were no fingerprints taken.
People.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah. So investigators tried to come up with some possible motives, and really the best that they could do was that it was a burglary gone wrong because they knew the family was wealthy. So people in the town knew this family was wealthy. They were wealthy and they were frugal people. It was known that people didn't like them. They knew about the conviction for incest. The family kind of kept to themselves, except for Victoria. As I mentioned, she was a little bit more social. Mm-hmm. She was kind. She sang in the choir at church. Everybody knew Andreas was an asshole. He was crotchety. He was abusive to his wife, to the kids that didn't survive. He was a known creep. It was pretty messed. The family was pretty messed up. Mm-hmm. But the robbery gone wrong, that was kind of the investigator's original theory. This kind of went back and forth. So the only thing that I know of that I read that was taken was some jewelry and some paper money. Victoria's purse kind of had been emptied out is what my understanding was.
Okay.
But the reason that they didn't say that it was robbery necessarily was because the family had like a box that had like gold and like stuff in it, and it was hidden somewhere else on the property, and that was not taken. So we're like, it really wasn't, because that would have been taken.
Yeah.
So I don't think that holds any weight. And the other thing is, it doesn't explain why someone would have hung out on the property.
No.
They fed the animals. They ate food from the house, including the entire supply of bread from the kitchen. There was an animal carcass, like down in a cellar or whatever, that had like meat cut off of it. And they took care of the dog. You know, they like stayed there for a while. So if they intended to rob the place, you think you just get what you came for and leave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And not like hack up an entire family of six, right, and stick around.
Right. That just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. And also like the brutality of it, that doesn't sound like a robbery gone wrong to me.
Mm-mm. No way. Even if that was the motive, like, oh no, I was caught.
Yeah.
You're not going to do it in that fashion. Like,
yeah.
That's fucked up.
If it was like a random person that, I mean, obviously robbery is usually somebody that knows you have money, right? Somebody from town, somebody that worked for you or something like that. So yeah, they're going to be able to identify you, but I don't know. Not to that level, like where you're going to murder a 2-year-old sleeping in their bassinet.
Yeah. Just
does not compute.
Mm-mm. No.
Something far more sinister going on here, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think we have to look at suspects too and kind of some of the potential motives kind of together.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the suspects that they came up with were, now this is the dumbest one in my opinion, which I don't even think it should be on the list, but we got to bring it up just because of how dumb it is. It's funny. No. So Victoria's dead husband came up as a suspect. What? Yeah.
Her dead one. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So Carl Gabriel, who was killed during World War I, came up as a suspect. So his comrades clearly vouch for the fact that he died in battle, but his body was never recovered.
Which, so when for some the time.
Right.
Yeah.
But when someone mentioned seeing the figure on the farm they didn't recognize, they said it looked like he maybe was wearing a military outfit. So obviously they jumped to the first conclusion and said Carl Gabriel came back and he wanted revenge and, you know, and
oh
whatever. And yeah. So no, that's no, dumb. No.
Yeah.
He's gone. So then there was a set of brothers by the name of Anton and Carl Bischler who had worked on the Hinterkaifeck farm, and they had actually helped with the potato harvest at one point prior to the murders, and they were known for being petty thieves. They worked for the family during the time frame that the previous maid, Krizanne Rieger, was employed with the Gruber family. And she testified in court saying that one of the brothers had made advances toward her and basically creeped around her window at night. Both of the brothers had extensive knowledge of the farm, and the family dog was familiar with Anton especially and never barked at him, but seemed to bark at everyone else that came near it. The maid testified saying that she believed it was possible that Anton and Carl might have done the killings along with another man by the name of George Siegel, who worked at the farm, because they all knew that the family had money. And Siegel had actually broken into the home back in 1920 and stole some small items. He also admitted to carving the handle of the murder weapon when he worked at the farm, so he knew where the murder weapon was kept.
Interesting.
Yeah. So that is why they kind of like put those three as potentials. And then there was another set of brothers who were suspected. Their last name was Thaler. Again, the maid is pointing fingers. She said that Joseph Thaler stood outside her window at night asking her questions about the family, where they slept at night, what rooms they were in, where they kept their money hidden, things like that. And she also noted that when he was there, there was always another person standing nearby. But that was the best that they could come up with for those potential robbery gone wrong. The other major suspect that authorities alleged was a man by the name of Paul Mueller. He was a German migrant. And this one's interesting because he was a suspect in another murder that happened in Massachusetts.
Oh, dang.
And this was a family that was murdered back in 1898. It's also believed that Mueller killed dozens of people in the U.S. between 1898 and 1912 using a blunt weapon, a farm tool, a pickaxe. The bodies were stacked in a similar manner, and there was no apparent motive. But that's really most that they could connect it. This guy would like hop on trains and murder people with a pickaxe.
And most of them were in America?
Yeah.
Or basically all of them were?
Yes. Yeah. But he was a German. Yeah, but he was a German migrant. So he ended up back in Germany, I think. So
I don't know. That one still seems a little far-fetched. But
I think so too.
Yeah.
So now I'm really gonna blow your knickers off. Ready?
Sure. No.
Okay. So for the way this went down, this motive seems way more sinister to me. Intimate, brutal. The strangulation stands out to me. The number of blows. Victoria's injuries specifically, how they are different than the rest of the victims. But listeners, I'm going to let you noodle on this and come up with your own theories. But with that being said, I'm going to tell you my theory, why I think, and all that. And it's just purely speculation.
Okay.
Good old Lorenz Schlittenbauer.
Oh, boy.
Lorenz had a serious relationship with Victoria. He wanted to marry her, but Andreas wasn't having any of that. Lorenz actually confronted Andreas about the two-year-old son being a product of incest. And they had some words. And Andreas even threatened him with a Sith. Shit got heated. Victoria even demanded child support from Lorenz, claiming that the boy was his. And Lorenz was not someone who had money like the Gruber family did. but he agreed to pay it. He had no way to prove that the boy wasn't his. But as soon as he started paying Victoria the money, she changed the guardianship of the boy into Andreas's name. What? Now, this like further reinforced the rumors about the truth of who Joseph's father really was. Now, this is so messed up. And this could have given Lorenz reason to have grievances against both Andreas and Victoria. She was demanding money from him, which he didn't really have in the first place. And then she stopped allowing Lorenz the right to see the boy after she started taking his money.
That's messed up. Holy shit.
And then Lorenz ended up going to the police and told them that the boy was a product of incest. And they arrested Andreas and took him into custody. But then shortly after, Lorenz retracted his statement and Andreas was released. Now, rumor is they think that he retracted his statement because the Gruber family paid him off.
I could see that. Or if they were like, hey, let's make a deal. If you take this back, like you can actually marry Victoria or, you know, something.
So all this kind of went down, I think, around that time frame. But then some other stuff happened, too. So Lorenz had a child of his own, an infant child of his own. And I read in one report that this child died like around the time frame of these murders. Like very close proximity. And then Lorenz just suddenly vanished for like 3 days. That he could not be accounted for during this time frame. That, you know, he had those two boys, like a, I think he had like a 9-year-old and a 15-year-old or something like that. Could be wrong about those ages. But nobody knew where he was. Could he have been in the attic?
Oh my gosh.
So he was paying child support for a kid he claimed wasn't his own. He reported the incest on two separate occasions. He had multiple altercations with Andreas. His own infant child had died around the same time frame. He disappeared from his home for several days, could not be accounted for. Might have been hiding out on the Gruber property. He probably just freaking snapped. And no one will ever really know.
Oh my gosh.
But the fact that like Victoria's injuries were so different, and then that the fact that the little boy was like covered up with her dress. And like the maid was treated differently too. I mean, she was obviously brutally murdered too, but like the little boy and the maid were like the innocents in this situation.
And they were the ones that were covered up.
Yeah. So, listeners, I'll let you make your own decisions on what you think and how this all went down. But we'll never really know.
No.
So an interesting fact, too, that I'll throw in here at the end as we kind of like wrap this case up. Authorities were so desperate for answers that they went as far as reaching out to the metaphysical community for help. All six of the victims' heads were sent to Munich to a clairvoyant as a last-ditch effort to try to commune with the dead for clues.
Really?
Yeah.
Dang. And
they did send it to one medium that said that there were two killers and that the weapon was hidden on the farm. Take that with a grain of salt. The weapon was found on the farm a year after the murders when the property was demolished. It was found hidden in a false floorboard next to the fireplace.
Interesting.
All six bodies were buried without their heads. The six heads were lost during World War II, and no one knows where they are.
That's sad.
It's so sad. This case, the Hinterkaifeck investigation, was officially closed in 1955, but in 2007, police academy students in Furstenfeldenbruch re-examined the case using modern techniques, and all authors of the report independently agreed on who the main suspect in the case was. However, no name is mentioned out of consideration for his descendants.
But did they even hint that it was out of that list of suspects that we talked about?
I don't know. You'll have to look that up.
That's driving me nuts. But they
all unanimously agree that there was a clear-cut, definitive suspect. And listeners, is the Hinterkaifeck killings. We'll let you decide who you think the murderer or murderers are, and hope that I don't like to say we hope you enjoyed this case, because we never hope you enjoy murder, but hope that we did this case due diligence, and that we maybe brought some more information to light that you hadn't heard of before, and it was a doozy for sure.
Definitely. It's not fair. Just to not know. I mean, I guess I'm glad that they are kind of like definitively like, yes, based on this, it's this person. But
yeah, I kind of want to know what went down, because the events leading up to that, with the older Cecilia having her, whatever happened with her, running off into the woods, and then Victoria having her meltdown and emptying her bank account, wanting to run away.
Exactly.
Was she like wanting to run away with Schlittenbauer? But probably not, because if she was denying him rights to see Joseph,
right,
she probably just was trying to get out and start over.
I could
maybe
see that.
That was the thing, is maybe she told him like, I'm leaving, I'm getting out of here, I'm trying to start my life over. And then he just had lost his own child and is dealing with this crazy ass family and just snapped and lost his, going through this grief of losing his own child.
Which, yeah, exactly. I could definitely see it. And he probably was threatening them all, because, I mean, he has already proven by coming forward to the, the police saying like, hey, this is incest, like, accused him of doing that and stuff like that. So I wouldn't put it past him to like make threats at the family during that time, and like really like scaring them to kind of get his way. That's so crazy.
And I feel it's terrible. I feel bad for the entire family, but I feel the worst for that little girl.
Yep, me too. And the maid.
Well, yeah, the little girl, the little boy, and the maid.
Yeah, and of course the little boy, too. But
yeah,
I mean, those three the most, because it's like they had nothing to do with any of it.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't even know what was going on.
Yeah.
It makes me sick.
I never know how to end these things, because there's really no when good way to end. It's like,
when it's this heavy. Well, listeners. We hope you've learned something very valuable today on this episode of The Cop.
Keep track of your house keys.
Uh-huh.
If you hear strange noises, check your house thoroughly.
Yep.
Look, change the locks. Yeah, check the locks. Change the locks.
Yep. If you have a neighbor that is acting a little weird, you might want to look into that. Take it more seriously,
See something, say something, people. See something, say something. Do something.
Yes. Exactly.
And then, yeah, stay safe out there.
Yeah. Have fun. Question mark? You know, be kind. Because if you're kind, this shit won't happen.
It won't happen. Yeah. Yeah. PSA.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The be rainbow comes up, and now you know.
The more you know.
Yeah.
Till next time.
Yeah.
We love you.
We do. And bye.
Bye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.